Blog Talk Radio.
The extra point is up, and it is good. Welcome to the Extra Points Radio Show. I'm your host, the coach, Keith Howard, and we got a great, great show for you today. Of course, we've got our pay attention topics. We always like to kick off with those, and then we're going to do a little D.C. local sports wrap-up. I'm just going to give everybody an update on our four major teams, see where we are, see what we're doing. I know we aren't winning any championships. That's unfortunate. Then we're going to bring back fitness guru, fitness extraordinaire, Joy Henry, to come out and talk to us, a little warm-up for us, talking a little bit of that Michigan State and all those allegations. It's a crisis at Michigan State, so Sparty's naughty right now, so we got to dig into that a little bit. We'll keep her on tap for some predictions, as I did horrible again last week. Cannot take me to Vegas. Cannot. So we got to get our predictions. But first, let's just dig right into our pay attention topics. And, you know, as I sit here and got ESPN Center behind me, I noticed that Kevin Ogande uses a tablet and Hannah Storm uses paper. Well, Coach Howard uses paper. I'm going to keep on using paper. Go ahead, Hannah, use that paper, girl. So look, PAT, pay attention topic. What is it? It is those little stories that are out there that you might want to pay attention to now, because I got a feeling that they're going to come up down the road as a major story. And the first one is our guy, Tiger Woods. Who watches golf unless Tiger's playing? Nobody. So I tell you what, Tiger, he made a big splash this week at the Farmers Open. And I knew he would, because he was playing Torrey Pines, one of the rare golf courses that I've played and actually didn't do too poorly. Actually did pretty well over at Torrey Pines. Then San Diego is beautiful. It is probably Tiger Woods' favorite course. And so everyone knew that he would do well. I mean, you just kind of knew it. It's his place. It's Tiger built. So, you know, he waited, though. He left us kind of in suspense. So Tiger had not made a cut since 2015. And, you know, the concern was that he was going to miss another cut. Fortunately, thank goodness, Tiger made the cut on the 18th hole yesterday to finish one under par. Now, he's still 10 shots back, 10 shots back from the leader. And I guess my question for the listening audience is, who's the leader? Who cares? Nobody does. Nobody cares. This isn't a major. That's the first thing. It's really kind of the first, maybe second. We got a little bit of technical difficulty, so we're going to sign off, and we'll be right back on the Extra Points Radio Show. And we are back on the Extra Points Radio Show. I am your host, the coach, Keith Howard. Apologize for that technical difficulty, but hey, it's a podcast, and from time to time you do get that. So anyway, back to what I was talking about with Tiger Woods. He made the cut, barely, 18th hole, and he made it. But you know what? No one really cares, because no one cares that he's 10 shots back. No one cares. Everyone cares that he is playing weekend golf. And quite honestly, I mean, I know 10 shots is a lot, but he's in it. and he may have a shot to win it. So, I mean, you can't win it if you don't make the cut. Tiger's made the cut, so I think we got to look at it. So congratulations to him on just making the cut. Now, you know, what we'd like to see him do is hopefully the guys in front of him will melt down a little bit. They'll get, you know, maybe feel the pressure of having Tiger Woods lurking over their shoulder, and maybe they choke and he gets into the thick of things. I can tell you this, if he gets down to about five strokes back with about 10 holes to go, he's got a shot. He's got a shot to win it. And if he wins the Farmers at Torrey Pines, don't know what's going to happen next. We'll talk about that for a while, but let's move on. Carolyn Wozniacki, she failed in her previous 43 majors, but in the spirit of Tiger, who cares? Nobody cares. And you know why? Because Serena isn't there. And while Serena's friends with Carolyn Wozniacki, and that's nice and everything, if Wozniacki's not, if the Williams sisters aren't playing, or at least Sloane Stephens not playing, or Maria Sharapova not playing, nobody really, really cares. I wonder what the ratings were. 3:30 a.m. in the morning. I know Chris Fowler was up, and I know I'll be up tomorrow morning to watch Federer. But I'm sorry, Caroline Wozniacki. The only one that cares about this is Ryan Kerrigan. That's the only person. I know. Here's the thing. She beat the number one seed, Salma Halep. She beat her 7-6, 3-6, 6-4. And quite honestly, it's the first time that she's going to be ranked number one since, gosh, it's been 6 years. The only person that's gone that long between stints of ranked number one, Serena Williams. So, again, it's just not women's tennis has to have the Williams sisters, just like golf has to have Tiger Woods. So, you know, congratulations to Caroline, but no one cares. Moving on. Shaquem Griffin. Everyone cares about this. University of Central Florida linebacker, doing really, really well at the Senior Bowl. I was fortunate to watch a couple practices at the Senior Bowl this week, Mobile, Alabama. And he is playing, for those of you that don't know, with one hand. That's right. If you didn't get to see him during the regular season, which his team was undefeated, Central Florida. If you don't get to see him in these practices, watch the Reese Senior Bowl today at 2:30 on ESPN. I'm going to tell you right now, you'll be in for a treat. First of all, they got him playing defensive end, which I think is a good rush end. He's a little light for the NFL at rush end. But, I mean, if you're going to play situational football and you just want a guy like the Patriots are using James Harrison, hey, go in on third and long and just rush the quarterback. That's all you do. He's perfect for it. He's absolutely perfect. He's hard to block. So they got him at rush end. They also put him at linebacker, which is his natural position. He can blitz. He can pass rush. He can cover. That's what you want from a linebacker. And, oh, by the way, yes, he can tackle. So if you're wondering, can he tackle? Yes. So you got that going for him. And then, here's what I didn't know. They got him playing safety. Now, I know he can cover. I get it. He can cover. But, wow, safety? Hey, it is what it is. So good for him. Everybody's pulling for him. Everybody wants to see him do well. You know, let's hope he does. And you know, we'll keep it going there. But that is not our pay attention topic for this week. Our pay attention topic for this week, and unfortunately, when we lost our power, we also lost all of our sound effects. So no sweat. You know what the sound effect sounds like. Our pay attention topic for this week, I think it's one that's pretty interesting. It's the XFL. Vincent Kennedy McMahon has done it again. Yes. What Vince has done is he has rolled out something that was a failure some years ago. I think it was 2001 that Vince came out with this new brand of football. The USFL had failed, and Vince was going to try his hand at spring football, and it was going to be different and this, that, and the other. But here's the genius of McMahon and the reason why really he's a billionaire. I thought it was odd that Monday Night Raw, which is the World Wrestling Entertainment, which is Vince's billion-dollar company, was really, really hyping this 25-year anniversary. Now, don't get me wrong. It is quite a feat to be a weekly episodic show, like the Extra Points Radio show. 25 years from now, we'll be able to say we're still doing this show, to continue, and to continue at really ranked number one every Monday night, except for Monday Night Football. So I just thought it was odd, though, that he hyped it up so much. And then on the back end of the week, or tomorrow, there's a pay-per-view. There's a pay-per-view where, for the first time, it's the Royal Rumble, where the first time women are participating in the Royal Rumble. And by the way, but before you even run out and go get it, first of all, run out and go get it. But second of all, the women are going to steal the show tomorrow night. I guarantee you on that. They're going to steal the show. So I'm sitting there going, okay, sandwiched in the middle is this announcement. And notice the announcement was only done on social media. It was done on Facebook, Twitter, all of them, Instagram. It's done everywhere, YouTube, everywhere, that this XFL, which really stands for Extreme Football League, will be played in 2020. Now, here's why, in my opinion, this will work. Because he's giving it time to work. First of all, he's dumping $100 million of his own money. So he sold off shares from the WWE to raise the money. And he $100 million, that's a lot of money. Like, it's got to work. And, oh, by the way, he said he's prepared to dump in more of his own personal money to make sure that this works. So from a financial standpoint, this money will not be a hindrance. And there is no shortfall of capital being raised here. Now, a couple other fast facts. So the teams are going to be owned by the league. And I think that's very important, because once you start getting owners and they can kind of do whatever they want and kind of really go against Vince. Vince maybe now is more of a Roger Goodell commissioner type. I think that leads to trouble. I think you got to let the marketing genius of Vince market, and not only market each team, but make money for each team. And he's good at both. He's great at marketing, and that marketing is great money. Billionaire. You can't doubt it. So I think the fact that he owns each team is smart. Second, there are only going to be 18. Which is good. 18, 10 games. That means it's almost like college. It's almost, think Big Ten. Every game in the Big Ten counts, whether it's Indiana, Iowa, or Penn State, Ohio State. Every game counts, all the way up to the last game. That's what Vince wants. He wants that sort of dramatic, and he's going to get it with an 18, 10-game season. Four teams will go to the semifinal. They'll have one semifinal game, and then they'll have the championship, XFL championship game. The location are going to be, it's going to be mixed. So it's going to be some major city, some mid-major. I've already thought about D.C. I don't think D.C. is a good fit, and here's why. Yes, they do have an empty stadium in RFK, and you need about a 50,000-seat stadium for a football game. But it's such rabid fans here with the Redskins. And quite honestly, the Redskins aren't winning. They haven't won in 20 years. So I just, you know, I know the old Washington Federals started out a ball of fire here at RFK Stadium. And after two games, they were done. Like, nobody went to the game. So I don't think D.C. would be a good spot. But, you know, maybe the cities that just lost teams, St. Louis, you know, Oakland's going to lose the Raiders to Las Vegas. Oakland would be a great place to have an XFL team. So see what happens with that. Players are going to be drug tested. Now, Vince has been notorious for having some miscues around steroids in the WWE. He has really lately cracked down on that. Quite honestly, he looked better the other night. He did not look like this muscle-bound superhero action figure. He looked like a normal 80-year-old man. That's what he looked like. And so you can see that he has fired folks left and right from the WWE for failing the wellness testing. So I think that they're going to do a good job with that. Of course, players are going to be paid to play. But what I like is players are going to be paid more if they win. So there is no sitting out of a game or blowing off a block or not go falling asleep in the meeting room. You, the only way you can make more money in this league is you have to win your game. And, you know, in the NFL, that's not the case. In the NFL, you can still make money and be on losing teams. Also, the it'll be a 40-player roster, so this helps, you know, this helps with not only cost. It really makes it so that players are going to – some players may be playing offense, defense, and special teams. Like they may be three-way players. And, you know, that's today's business model. Get more out of the employee by making them doing several jobs. So that's how that's going to work. And like I said, once you put up $100 million, it can't go wrong. Now, excuse me, here's what I want you to think about. In the old XFL, they came on the heels of the USFL. Who was the most powerful owner in the USFL? Anybody know? It was Donald J. Trump. Absolutely. Never said his name on the Extra Points radio show. But I have to here because I'm going to connect some dots for you. Who's also in the WWE Hall of Fame? Celebrity in the celebrity way, Donald J. Trump. Trump and McMahon have been linked at the hip forever. It is no surprise that with the one of the things that Vince came out and said immediately was that you had to stand up for the national anthem. I thought that was odd. Why is he talking about that? What's the big deal? Well, now we see what the big deal is, or we may see later. That's why it's a pay attention topic. Pay attention to the XFL. I think you're going to see more coming its way. So, usually right here in this little slot right here, we come up for air, we grab some water, and we play our Chuck music. But again, due to our technical difficulties, unable to do that today. So we're going to go right into our D.C. local wrap-up. And the reason why I want to do that is just kind of stop and give pause. We haven't done it in a few weeks and see where our teams are and what they're doing. And let's start with our Washington Nationals, who have pretty much remained quiet in the offseason, which baseball fans, we call the hot stove season. They've been relatively quiet. Now, they did sign outfielder Howie Kendrick to a two-year, $7 million deal. If you have a son and you don't know, you know, what extracurricular activity he'd like to do, why don't you give him a bat and a ball? Howie Kendrick is just okay. But he signed a two-year, that means he's going to get $3.5 million a year. He won't even play in half of the game. He won't. Now, saying he won't even play in half the games means he's still going to play in about 70 games. Keep in mind, if he's just 25% success rate at bat, then it was worth it. Baseball, that's the sport for your child, let me tell you. Baseball is. So anyway, so Kendrick's out there. And don't get me wrong, Howie Kendrick earned it. He earned it by playing some great defense. In the few games he played last year, he made some game-saving catches. He made some game-saving putouts at home plate. And he had some of the most timely hitting on the team. He really did. When they really needed a hit, they would have him pinch hit, and he would get a single or a walk-off, and he did it enough times to earn this payday. And good for the Nats for rewarding him for his part-time play. But here's what he does that's most important. He strengthens the bench of the Nationals. So now Kendrick, remember now, he can play any of the three outfield positions, and he could come in and play a little infield if you needed him to, or he could just pinch hit or pinch run because he's fast. So you've got a guy that can do multiple things for only $7 million. It's a steal. So from a business standpoint, the Nats really got over on this one. So let's follow Howie during the season, see how he does. I think he'll do really well. One other thing that the Nats are going to have to be concerned about, they do have a new skipper, Dave Martinez. Dave's going to start the year with basically Dusty's roster. Same roster, same guys. The only question mark is going to be Adam Eaton, who they signed to a boatload of money in free agency last year. And so now it's going to be interesting to see what they do because Michael A. Taylor has beat him out of his job. So, and, you know, while I'm come from the old school of, you know, you really don't want to lose to injury your position. But Michael A. Taylor was amazing last year and took this position. The guy didn't lose it. Michael A. Taylor took it. And so, you know, all credit due to Michael A. Taylor. I still think they're going to make this kind of a quietly open competition in spring ball, in spring training. So Michael A.'s got to keep – he's got to keep playing. He's got to keep doing really well because they got to figure out what to do with Adam Eaton. They paid him way more money than Michael A. Taylor. So Michael A. did sign a contract to avoid arbitration. So he's pleased with his – I believe he went from $2 million to $4 million. I mean, he didn't really get a huge payday. But I think the fact that he's on the team now, solid, and he's a solid starter, he's happy. Wizards. 26-22, not good. Here's the theme for the Wizards right now. They lose to bad teams. That tells me something. They have an immature team. They don't know yet how to win. They don't. They're good. They're very good. They've got Wall and Beal. Now, we all know the super team, you got to have at least three all-stars, even if the all-stars are washed up, Dwayne Wade. Okay, even if they're washed up, you got to have three. So if you look at Golden State, they got their three. They got Draymond, they got Clay, they got Seth Curry. So there's their three, right? Now, oh, then they got Durant, they got four, so they're a super team. But the Wizards don't have that third, and while they pay Otto Porter like he's a third, he's not. And so they've got these two all-stars in Wall and Beal who have, you know, different leadership styles, I'll just put it that way. Wall, a little bit more fire and fury. Beal, you know, let me just lead by example, da-da-da. And I think it's clashing. I think it's hurting the team. I really do. I think this is a problem. Now, they lost to the Mavs the other night. The Mavericks are not even playing 500 basketball. I mean, they're one of the poorer teams in the league this year. The Wizards lost to them by 23 points. They shot 30%. Now, in baseball, 30% is batting 300, you're an all-star. You're probably making $10 million. But in basketball, 30% shooting is not even the G League. It's not even the Capital Go-Go's or whatever their name is. 30% is Keith Howard. I mean, that's just not good shooting. So, by the way, I wish I could shoot 30%. And then they only scored 75 points. I mean, in an NBA game, a whole game, 12-minute quarters, you only had 75 points. You got two all-stars. That's unacceptable. So here's what I do know. Their payroll as a team is $125 million, which is fourth in the NBA and fourth highest in the NBA. Fourth highest in the NBA. And they're barely making the playoffs. They are one or two games out of third place, one or two games out of not making it at all. That's how clogged the Eastern Conference is and really how bad the Eastern Conference is. So we have a problem. DC, we have a problem. Now, how do you fix it? I think the first thing you got to do to fix it is I think you got to start Oubre. I think Kelly Oubre starts and Markieff sits down. I think that's the first thing you do. The second thing you do is you could keep Markieff in and go small ball, still bring Kelly in and sit Martin Gortat down. You could do that. Thirdly, you could just get some veteran leadership to come off the bench and, you know, just chalk it up that, you know, Mike Scott and Abimi, Meenie, or whatever his name is, those guys, it didn't work, right? It didn't work. Go out and get yourself a high-priced veteran and have him come in and kind of lead the team from afar. I think I'm saying that because I'm comfortable doing it personally. You know, I've gone into staffs where, you know, didn't have a lot of experience on them, and that was my role and my job, to just come in and be an experienced hand. And the Wizards are craving that right now. They got to do it. They're paying the coach way too much money. And this $125 million payroll is a lot. So let us move. Washington Capitals, 29-15-5, and they're in first place in the Metro Division. I love it. Here's why I love it. They got the Flyers coming up after the All-Star break. We're in All-Star break right now for the NHL, for those of you that don't know. So the game is tomorrow. Then after the Flyers, they got the Penguins on February 2nd. So the Flyers are about 7 points behind the Caps, and the Penguins are 6 points behind. So everyone knows if you get a win in hockey, that's worth 2 points. So basically the Penguins are 3 games behind the Capitals for first place. Now, here's why this is still good. It's still good because the Caps are staying the course. They're not blowing away the field, which is what they've done in years past. In years past, they were way ahead of the Penguins, way ahead of the Caps. But this year, they're not. And you want to keep it that way. Right now, Columbus, the Blue Jackets, are only 6 games back, tied with the Penguins for second in the Metro. Now, Ovi's having a solid season, but not what you would say an MVP season. He's not. Ovi is you know, he's an all-star. And I saw him in some of the skills competitions last night, did a great job. He does what Ovi can do. But he's not blowing it away. Like I said, he won't win the MVP. They have very average numbers. They're getting 3 goals per game. They're allowing 2.8 per game. That's a 500 team. It's very, very average. As long as they stay average, I think they will go further in the playoffs. And if they get to the finals, I think with this rabid Rock the Red fan base, trying to say that 3 times real fast, they could win a Stanley Cup. So this team right now is D.C.'s highest hope at a championship. And then let me wrap up here with our Washington Redskins. All right, so it's been relatively quiet. They kept Jay Gruden against my wishes, against my plea. They kept Jay Gruden. They signed Mason Foster to too much money, which concerns me. And here's why. Somebody's got to go in that linebacker corps. Will Compton's a free agent. Zach Brown's a free agent. I'm going to talk about Zach Brown in a minute. And I thought Montrell Spate played pretty well in a reserve role. So somebody, they're going to have to make a hard decision because they paid Mason Foster so much money. And remember, he's coming off an injury. Well, I didn't really agree with that signing. Kerrigan. Kerrigan's out playing dodgeball at the Pro Bowl, and he's locked in. So, you know, good for him. We got him locked in. Now, the elephant in the room is signing Kirk Cousins. Senior Bowl really has a lot to do with signing Kirk Cousins. So the rumor, if you believe Mel Kiper and you believe Tom McShay, the rumor is the Redskins are going to sign Baker Mayfield. Now, let me tell you, mistake. Signing Baker Mayfield is almost like the way they used to do business, which was let's sell tickets and not win football games. In my opinion, Baker Mayfield's undersized for this league. He is a system quarterback, which Oklahoma has a system that is not conducive to the NFL. And I see Johnny Manziel all over again, at least talent-wise. Now, I know there have been some off-the-field issues with Baker. I'm not going to tie him to that, but I just don't see a Baker Mayfield being that guy who's going to stand in the pocket, lean, mean, and tall, and look downfield and go through his progression to figure out how to adapt to him. I think there's enough help on this defensive line. Still, they have not fixed the defensive line. Oh, by the way, Ricky Jean-Francois, who was a backup here, starts for New England's defensive line. Okay, anyway, I digress. So I'm concerned about the Skins and what they're doing with the whole Baker Mayfield thing. He's looked good in practice at the Senior Bowl. I'm sure he'll look good today in the Senior Bowl. But at the end of the day, I think that we're gonna have a little bit of a concern there. Now, before we wrap this segment up and flip over and bring in Joy and her Fit with Joy segment, where we're going to be talking about this Michigan State just disaster, we'll do that in about a minute or so. But before we do that, there are a couple other names that I want to really, really give some thought to. Zach Brown. Zach Brown led the NFL in tackling. Signed Mason Foster to a big deal. They haven't signed Zach Brown yet. That concerns me. What are we doing with Zach Brown? Are we not going to re-sign him? Are we not going to re-sign the leading tackler in the NFL, who's also, by the way, fast as any corner I've seen? So I don't know what we're going to do with that one, but I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about Ryan Grant. Ryan Grant, arguably could probably start for this team, but is definitely a third receiver. So I'm concerned that we have not re-signed him because other teams will like a guy like Ryan Grant. Absolutely, they're going to like him. So we got to make sure we do that. And then, of course, we've got Sua Craven. Now, Sua says that he's back, he's ready to play, da-da-da-da-da. Well, I don't even know if he fits in this defense anymore. I guess they do need a safety with D'Angelo Hall, you know, unceremoniously being cut from the team instead of letting the guy retire with dignity, which I thought was tacky. So, yeah, I do believe that Sua Craven could come in and help. My concern is that they haven't signed him yet. They haven't even talked about it yet. So, hey, that's our wrap-up of local sports. And like I said, I got some concerns. Right now I'm mostly concerned about the Wizards. I think the Wizards are in absolute trouble. I think the Redskins got some big, major decisions to make within the next probably 45 days. They've got some huge decisions. I think the Nats are fine, right on track. They got to stay in front of this Bryce situation. Did anyone know that Bryce's dog was named Wrigley? Anybody know that? Wrigley as in Wrigley Field as in Chicago? Anybody know that? Where his best friend plays baseball? Better watch out. The team I'm most comfortable with right now are the Caps. Caps are doing just fine. So, hey, without further ado, I really want to get into this Michigan State issue. And for those of you that haven't heard the show in the past, we always like to bring in one of my former players, Joy Henry. She comes in and does a segment we call Fit with Joy. And if you've ever worked out with her, if you're one of her clients out there listening, you know that Joy's warm-up is hotter than the actual workout for most people. So that's what I want to do is bring her in today to warm up this topic around this Michigan State situation. So for those of you that don't know, Michigan State's athletic department has some allegations of sexual assault and violence. So I couldn't think of a better person to bring in who's been following this case since it broke, and another Big Ten person. Fit with Joy. Joy Henry, are you there?
I'm here, Coach. I am here. And this is definitely unfortunate that I'm here for this to report on it further.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know that you're a Big Ten athlete, and I know that you love the Big Ten and you bleed, what is that, white and Nittany blue. Being naughty here, kind of get the audience up to speed on what in the heck is falling apart. I mean, you've got two pillars of coaches in Izzo and D'Antonio. What is going on?
Yeah, well, as you talked about earlier with the pay attention topics, and that being the acronym of PAT, the point after touchdown, as we reiterate, I'm pretty much going for a two-point conversion on this one. And to add 2 points to that, to further just state that there's just one point of negligence, and then there's the second point of disregard. And the negligence is just the two coaches, Izzo and D'Antonio, where they've been alerted of these allegations, and it seems as though they've turned the cheek. They've kind of, as I was in the Nittany Lions track and field athlete, I was in the athletic department, of course. I didn't see anything on my end with my coaches, and it just was a part of the football team, specifically with Joe Paterno. It's almost as if they don't do what they're supposed to do. And so that negligence and that disregard seems to continue to surface here and there, and it's kind of swept back underneath the rug. It's just one of those things where if you're an athlete and your basis there is a scholar athlete, mainly obviously do your work, do your school, get great academics, and compete at a high level. And one of the examples I use is just athletics mainly with if you get injured and you say to your coach that you feel a certain tug or so in your foot and they don't believe you. They say it's all in your head. So then that starts the cycle of mistrust and it starts to breed where if you can't tell them about that, then what other things can't you tell them about? Or won't they believe about you? And it just starts that power structure. So just to wrap around to your pay attention topics, you let off and then you ended with the XFL and you have Vince McMahon, yes, the guy with the WWE, got those shares, and now he's going to bring about the Extreme Football League. And then the tie to Donald Trump and his allegations. So it's not just in sports. It's infiltrating every industry. And it's just a constant reminder as a woman and even an athlete with the things that we can't seem to escape.
Well, let me ask you this question because, you know, you bring up the point about negligence, but there's a line a mile long of people who would say that you couldn't find any better character guys than Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio, and that this really isn't an issue for them. This was a bad doctor who happened to work at Michigan State and is just a bad guy. This now has leaked and trickled all the way into these teams. You know, what do you say to the Sparty fan who goes, wait a minute, Tom Izzo's great. He's a family man. He's bringing us all this money and all this attention. Are you saying that Izzo and D'Antoni should be gone?
I'm saying that it's a corrupt culture. Just that. It has so many elements that are complicit where you're not directly involved or you didn't see it, but someone reports it to you and you're in a high-powered position, it's your duty to act. It's your duty to get the right authorities, those that are in law enforcement, in on it, and just to go ahead and investigate. And so with Penn State, as I, again, was an athlete there, not involved in football, but in track and field, it's a revenue-generating sport. And that power structure that – this particular athlete is bringing in recruits. That recruit is bringing in money that makes the industry and the entire university look great. And you have trustees. The trustees, they're there to be in the interest of the university. And so you see the cycle. We're supposed to trust you, to elect the right people to take care of these matters, to make sure that, as Penn State had, don't bring dishonor to our name. Anything that brings dishonor to our name is shameful. And so when you kind of go ahead and, again, sweep it underneath the rug, turn the cheek, it just continues to breed this culture of disregard and negligence. And those two points continue to be complicit, and then accountability and appointing, and I did the right thing. I do believe, to answer your question defiantly, and definitively, that they need to step down. And that's what happened to Joe Paterno. What the reports say, didn't know about it. But then there were investigations so that one of the assistants told him about it. Now, how he handled it at that moment, years later with these 2012 reports, show that it wasn't enough. He failed those boys. And in a sense, had stepped down. I believe the university fired him, not particularly sure exactly the line of action, but it ended in him no longer being with us, not at the university, but in life, unfortunately. It's just a whole bunch of things that surface where you don't take care of it at the core, and then it just continues to build up.
So you mentioned a culture of corruption. The Michigan State's president has already stepped down and resigned. The athletic director stepped down and resigned yesterday. Your argument is that the two pillars of coaching in the big revenue sports should resign. What about Mark Emmert, who's the NCAA president? Because, I mean, it sounds like, I hear it in your passion.
Great question.
You think this is way bigger than just Michigan State or the Big Ten or Penn State of the past or whatever.
Great question.
That this is a whole shebang here. Should Mark Emmert, what should he do? I'm not going to even try and fill your head with an idea. What do you think the president of the governing body the NCAA. What do you think he should do?
Well, again, with the pointers, this is Extra Points Radio Show, and we definitely delve into the business of sports. We delve into the pay attention topics, the point after touchdown. We delve into all those different ways of talking about the sport with the terminology of the sport. And pointers, specifically, as I told you, the two-point conversion I wanted was negligence and disregard. And now I'm talking about pointers specifically. And basically what that is, and the term for that and the meaning, is a variable that can point to another location of memory. And as I said before, Penn State is just that. He definitely stuck all of his wits ends at that. He went there with an NCAA sanction and got the allegations and all the investigations underway to make sure that this was taken care of. And if we want to learn from the past, we have to do the right thing. We have to make sure that those that weren't heard are now being vindicated and validated for what harms that have come their way. And for Mark Emmert to be in that situation, 2012, investigating, and now we're here in 2018, and not just one particular sport at one university, but multiple, you got to look at this individual. And from what I understand, the report said that he's known. Not just that he's known with Michigan State. As I said, he's known before with Penn State. Did after the fact the due diligence to rectify it. So we got to look at Mark Emmert. We got to look at the whole entire prior structure. And again, it transverses not just sports, it's in every industry. As we wrap back around to the PATs that you were going down the line for with sports, particularly, but the first time you had to announce Donald J. Trump, our president of the United States, the free world, he has not just before the election. He continues to let us know that he's won, and we understand that, but there were ways that he couldn't have won. I mean, he had the tape, and he talked about a locker room situation, and that's just the way the guys talk. And then you have athletes coming around saying, we don't talk like that in the locker room. We're doing X's and O's, okay? But then it's the power structure of, okay, now Billy Bush, the guy who was there in the locker room with him, which is actually a bus, you know, it really is a culture. It's a, I'm trying to sound cool, but really and truly, like you said, he can do anything and he'll get away with it. And just that, he's now the president. But even before that, then you have allegations of him with porn stars, Stormy Daniels. I mean, this culture of not just being in sports, but in the whole bringing it back to sports is life. You got so many examples. I could just go on and on. I mean, Louisville, you got the recruits getting escorted. That particular societal lens that we look through women in, the appeal. You have those that are just there for the male's satisfaction. And you got athletes who are actually trying to compete with the Title IX to be the best that they can with their scholarship. And then you have a figure like Nassar who's predicating and breathe and just preying on those individuals because they want to get to the next level and be in the Olympics. It's just all around, and just the guise of we just need to get to the masculinity of guys to say.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned the all around, and you know when you look at Mark Emmert is not. I've been fortunate enough to share a stage with Mark Emmert. I think he's a great guy, and he's built the NCAA into a billion-dollar business, just like Vince McMahon has. But you do see the dynamic of money and power. I would agree with you. Money and power really, really have folks acting, you know, I would hope to say out of character, but it looks like it's right in line with their character. And when we look at the names and the cast of characters that we've mentioned today, money and power is one thing that they all have in common. I would be in agreement with you that I think that the president made the right decision to resign. I believe the AD took too long to resign, but finally did. I do believe that the football coach, who I know, you know, is supposed to be one of the good guys. He never has any violations recruiting-wise or doping or anything like that. But unfortunately, it's recruiting season, and they're passing out money. If it's my son who just got offered to Michigan State, I'm saying I'm decommitting. unless he is no longer the coach. Therefore, I think within a week's time, there will be a coaching change there. And I believe the basketball coach, who very cavalierly said, I got a game tonight, so I haven't paid any attention to it, I think he's going to be gone. And quite honestly, I don't think it'll stop there. If you remember the old SMU death penalty, I think that this is going to hurt Michigan State even more throughout their athletic department. But I'm going to stop at Mark Emmert, and here's why. Because at some point it appears, and I hope we, maybe you and I together, can band together as superheroes and fight this. But at some point the money and power is so overwhelming that people do stay. And I think Mark Emmert, unless he's just a nice guy and wants to step down, I don't believe that the NCAA is going to have him unceremoniously fired when he's built a billion-dollar organization, just like Vince McMahon has, just like the President of the United States has. So that's the one I want to watch. If we want to see real change, let's see what the NCAA does with Mark Emmert. Joy, I'm really excited to have you on here to give another train of thought on this, and clearly we can hear your passion. If you'll stay with us, I'm going to give my quick two-minute warning, and then I want to come back, and I want you to help me with these predictions here because I stink at predictions. Can you do that?
Well, Coach, I can definitely do that, Coach. I do want to make a further point, though, because I like what you said about Mark Emmert and having somebody in there who's built this kind of revenue-generating machine and what he's trying to do.
Okay, this is a three-pointer, then? This is a three-pointer? Okay,
yeah,
go ahead.
This is a new kind
shoot,
of sport,
shoot,
right?
Shoot your three-pointer.
In a sense.
Shoot your three-pointer.
Shoot my three-pointer. But actually, I'm actually taking away points. So, like in boxing, if you do something illegal, you hit below the belt, hold the back of the head, we do need to take away points. We do need to take away some things in a sense, give them the death penalty. So I agree with you about SMU. And I just want to ask you, in a sense, what would you do? Me as an athlete coming to you, I'm not talking about me being injured. I'm talking about me being sexually injured. Let's hypothetically put that out there. And you are a coach. You've been in different arenas. You've had coached from women to your little young boy. What is the protocol that's supposed to happen? I want to find solutions. If we're superheroes, we can't just keep talking about the after effects. We have to make sure that we prevent.
So that's an easy one. It's all about the culture. So I've had to deal with that twice. Coaching high school football, I had to deal with the child being physically abused by the parent. And so I knew that the steps were to go right into the school, to the guidance office, to the nurse, to the principal, right? So that one was an easy one. The more challenging one was when I was coaching women's tackle football, a game you play, a game you love. So what I did there was I set the tone for what the culture was going to be, which there was not going to be a culture where a player felt apprehensive about coming to practice. That was not going to happen. Now, if it happened, here's what the consequences were, which were that said player who was the bully or the aggressor was not going to be on the team. So if the owner did not step in, first of all, if this behavior did not seek to the liking of the accuser, then the aggressor would not be on the team. And that's the way we handled it. And fortunately, it worked out. And the beauty of this transaction I'm talking about, obviously I'm not saying names, but the beauty was that they turned out to be best of friends. And so that's good. But I don't think that happens if I don't set a culture of uncorrupt, right, where there are guidelines. I don't like to say rules, but they're guidelines that we follow, and I am the enforcer. And I don't see any guidelines at Michigan State. The guidelines were do whatever you want. Be uncivilized. Run wild. And there's no enforcement when they do that. And that's the bad part. So, great question. I appreciate that. Let me get into a quick two-minute warning because I got to get these predictions in. Two-minute warning is this. You heard me earlier say that women are going to steal the show at tomorrow night's pay-per-view, and I don't talk wrestling on this show a lot, but here's what you heard me say. Forget the wrestling. Women steal the show. I don't care if it's Oprah, Joy Henry. I don't care who it is. We got to give them fair and equal opportunity. The XFL has already said, we're paying our players, and we're going to pay them more if they win. But yet, the DC Divas and the Washington Prodigy are in some gym somewhere training, and they're not going to get any pay, and they could win all their games. And it's just not fair, and it's just not right. And until that's fixed, and they can get that opportunity in an environment where there is no fear, until they can get that, we're just talking. That's 2-minute warning for today. So, Joy Henry, you're back with us, right?
I am. That was a great 2-minute warning. I'm feeling like a star, so thanks so much for that platform.
So look here now. We're going to go on a lighter note here, but I can tell you what, I love talking the tough stuff. But a lighter note is I'm 6-11 overall. Now, in order to take me to Vegas, the sponsors have said you got to be at least 500 in your pick to even be thought about for going on your trip to Vegas. I was 2-4 last week. So here we go. I'm going to give you a game. You pick it. Here we go. Tonight, Warriors. I got the Warriors over the Celtics. What say you?
Well, I definitely got the Warriors over the Celtics, so I'm in agreement. Definitely got Curry, got Kyrie, but the entire Warriors, they're going to come out to play, and I don't think that the Celtics can have those bottles ready and slamming them and just instigating like they're going to be able to have a war in a sense. It's going to be a slaughter, Warriors over Celtics.
All right, very good. I'm picking the Warriors because KD's from Prince George's County. Okay, next one. The NFC over the AFC. Now, I'm sure you and I will be the only two people watching this game from Orlando, Florida, but my team is in the NFC. I'm going NFC. What say you?
Well, my team is in the NFC as well, and we are going to probably be the only ones watching, but I would say that our audience, they should tell everyone else to watch as well because – I watched yesterday with you the players preparing and those other skills events that they had. And there was some interesting, antics going on. I like the dodgeball. So, I mean, the hands of Landry was pretty neat. And the kick-tack-toe where Gonneau beat his friend, that was pretty good. So I'm looking forward to seeing some more fun, them having some fun out there.
Very good. So you got NFC. I got the Atlanta Hawks, who are awful. They are last in the Eastern Conference by record, defeating the lowly, pitiful Washington Wizards. What say you?
Oh, that's a tough one. I know that they haven't been great, the Wizards, against the sub-500 team. And the way that they're tilting their charts, they're going to probably be 500 if they keep in that rate, especially with this Atlanta team. I think that the Wizards feel the heat. They didn't have a good meeting, as Wall said. Wall wrote a wonderful letter to his dad for us to share. And it looks like he's trying to take on some leadership barrier. He got into an issue with the Dallas player. I'm not sure if I'm saying his last name correctly, but he's one of the shorter people in the league. He said that his teammates don't like him. So I think that this game is going to kind of be telling. So I'm going to go against you on that one and go with the Washington Wizards.
All right, very good. Got it. I got the Caps over the Flyers. Now, this is after the All-Star break, but I think the Caps win this game, and I think the Caps also go on to beat the Penguins. But Caps-Flyers, who you got? What say you?
Well, I'm not sure if this is a home game or not or if that makes any difference, but the Flyers beat them a couple weeks ago here in D.C. So I'm not sure if they can – win this one out. So I'm going to go against you again on this one and go with the Flyers.
Okay, you got it. The Broad Street Bullies, that's the Flyers. Okay, good. I've been hard on Georgetown. We had former head basketball coach Craig Esrick on the show last week. I got them losing tonight, though. They got Creighton. Georgetown's going to lose to Creighton. What say you?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. They did beat Saints, the Johns, the Red Storm in Queens, my hometown, and Mullen. It was pretty great for basketball, Big East basketball, and all the things that we were missing out on. I do see Creighton as they're one of those teams somewhere in the United States that bands together and makes appearances and seems to have a good team. So I'll just go with Creighton, honestly. I'm not sure what their game is and what their record is. Georgetown, they still need some pieces, like when we spoke to coach, former coach of the Georgetown Hoyas last week.
Craig Ashrick.
Craig Ashrick, correct. You just said it. Pretty much, he's right, and you're right with recruiting. You recruit, always, and I think they still have a ways to go. So I'm going to go with Creighton.
Very good. And then, of course, the bonus pick, and this is extremely important to me because, well, it's just a big deal. Federer going for his 20th Grand Slam. If I was born again, I would want to be Roger Federer. I've got a bromance with Roger Federer. Love him. Love the RF Nike hat. I got him winning the Aussie Open and claiming his 20th Grand Slam at 3:30 a.m. this morning over Martin Cilic, who, by the way, beat Federer at the U.S. Open, and I know you were there. Who do you have, what say you, in the Federer-Cilic final?
So I'm usually like the underdog person. I'm in that bandwagon where I don't go with the popular pick. I like to go against it, for that matter, just to upset people and make it more competitive and everyone has a level playing field. But it does seem like Roger Federer, he's on this high horse. And he's just that classy individual. And it's great. They say he does good interviews after the fact. So he's also a friend of Serena Williams, which is one of my favorites. So I'm going to go with Roger Federer. He's going to get his 20th, like you said. And I will say that he kind of, the whole going to be the greatest male athlete and against Michael Jordan, like Tom Brady's in that category. That's part of the reason why I'm with the underdogs. They wanted Cilic, but I'll go with Federer for this one.
You got it. You got it. All right. So, hey, listen, we love having Fit with Joy. Joy Henry, come out and speak with us and share this morning, and we hope we see you down the road. I also know that due to our technical difficulties, unfortunately, we don't have our wonderful intro and outro music. So, if I can get your help here, I'm gonna start with the sign off and you finish it. All right? How's that?
Sounds good.
All right. Well, hey, to our listening audience, thank you for listening. And as always, the extra point is up.
And it is very good.